Hello and welcome to episode 34 of the Educating Investors Podcast. My name is Scott Peterson, Financial Advisor of Harmony Wealth Management. Thanks for tuning in for today's episode. Is inflation coming? And if so, how much and how long? I believe the educated investor equals successful investors. The goal of this podcast is to help to educate as many individuals as possible on markets, the economy, and financial planning topics. In this episode, I'm going to discuss factors for and against higher inflation and what it means for markets. For central banks and investors, this may be among the most important issues to get right in 2021 and beyond. I believe a good place to start was a recent history of inflation. In a historic shift in January 2012, the U.S. Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke set a 2% target inflation rate, bringing the Fed in line with many of the world's other major central banks. Until then, the Fed's Policy Committee, the Federal Open Market Committee, or FOMC, did not have an explicit inflation target, but regularly announced a desired target range for inflation, usually between 1.7% and 2%, measured by the Personal Consumption Expenditure Price Index. According to the U.S. Bureau of Economic Analysis, or the BEA, the core PC price index is defined as the personal consumption expenditure prices excluding food and energy prices. Core PCE price index measures the prices paid by consumers for goods and services without the volatility caused by movements in food and energy prices to reveal underlying inflation trends. Even with the Fed keeping policy rates low after the great financial crisis, the Fed has had a difficult time meeting their 2% inflation target, even though there were warnings going out that we were going to see an increase in inflation due to the increase in liquidity in the markets. Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell at the Fed's annual Jackson Hole Symposium in August of 2020 updated their goal for inflation to an average of 2%. This new regime allows for inflation to go above and below the target so as long as the trend is 2%. The question is whether this new policy goal will help them achieve their long-term inflation goal. The core PC reading for December shows that the core inflation is below the Federal Reserve's 2% long-term target at 1.45%. The December core CPI index release was at 1.62%. The Fed is on record as using the core PCE data as its primary inflation gauge. We could see higher year-over-year inflation numbers due to the low inflation readings during the beginning stages of the pandemic. Month-over-month core PCE for March and April of 2020 were negative due to the pandemic. The return to normalcy with the vaccine could lead to one-off shifts in relative prices, but that wouldn't be the same thing as a sustained acceleration in the rate of inflation. The Fed will look at this as a temporary increase in inflation. So let's take a look at some of the factors that could impact higher or lower inflation longer term. So let's start by looking at some of the factors that can cause higher inflation. The first factor would be a continuation of the dollar depreciation. A falling dollar means the cost of goods we import costs more, thus a falling dollar is inflationary on goods we import, and we import a great deal because we are a consumption economy. Because most commodities are priced in dollars, commodity prices are higher. Core commodity prices rose 1.7% year-over-year ending December 31st. The rebound in commodity prices is partly attributable to the weaker dollar, but the rebound in global economic activity has also boosted these prices. In any event, while the weaker dollar and strong commodity prices are boosting import prices and the intermediate goods PPI, there's no sign that the cost pressures are boosting consumer prices, at least not yet. Core CPI inflation rate in the U.S. was only 1.6% year-over-year during December. The comparable measures for the Eurozone and Japan were close to zero at 0.2% and a negative 0.5%. So there's not much inflation for consumer price inflation in the U.S. and around the world. However, the dollar could continue to fall due to the twin deficits, a current account and budget deficit, if they continue to rise, which the dollar is negatively correlated to, which could lead to inflation continuing to move higher. The next factor that could cause inflation to be higher would be continued money printing if followed by an increase in the velocity of money. In order to get a more sustained increase in inflation, two things would be needed: a continued increase in money supply and velocity of money in the economy. We have seen the money supply increase, but not so much the velocity of money. Velocity is a measure of how fast cash circulates in an economy. The amount of money greatly matters, but equally important is how it moves through the economy. When you view money supply and velocity together, one notices they tend to offset each other. So the question is, why is the velocity of money decreasing? During the pandemic, the economy has been locked down, which leads to less consumption, especially in services that include travel, restaurants, live events, etc. The additional direct payments made to consumers went to an increase in savings and debt reduction. and for those that did not pay down additional debt or increase their savings, the money went into financial assets. This is the one area where the Fed and central banks around the world have been successful in increasing inflation, inflation in financial assets. The next factor that could cause higher inflation is supply chain constraints. The sudden and massive shift in the economy in 2020 have caused shortages and distortions in good-producing sectors and in shipping and trucking, as consumer spending has shifted from services such as flying somewhere for a vacation and spending money on lodging and restaurants and theme parks to goods. A recent example of this shortage would be the semiconductor space. This is due to demand for chips from everything from 5G cell phones to automobiles. The chip shortage has caused prices to rise for certain semiconductors, delays in filling orders, and auto makers to idle factories. If the problem persists, consumers may see delays in getting a new car and some electronic devices and possibly higher prices. The question is, how long does this goods inflation stay with us, and does inflation move from goods to services as the economy reopens? Ongoing deglobalization is the next factor that could cause higher inflation. Globalization was already starting to slow, the trade war with China and the use of tariffs. President Trump's trade war gave more impetus to buy Americans and buy local policies, and Biden seems intent to continuing them at this point. And now COVID-19 gives national governments everywhere reason to be as self-sufficient as possible. Businesses also feel the same pressure. This would be inflationary. A tight labor market is another factor that could cause higher inflation. Tight labor markets occur in times of low unemployment. In tight labor markets, demand for labor by employers exceeds the supply. In such a tight labor market, employers typically need to pay higher wages to attract employees, ultimately leading to rising wage inflation. Right now, there is a large excess supply of labor in industries hit by pandemic. There are close to 10 million fewer jobs now than at the beginning of 2020. So the risk of inflation coming from a tight labor market are not present at the current time. The Fed commitment to overshooting its inflation target to bring down the unemployment rate is another factor that could cause inflation to run higher. The Fed's preferred measure has consistently run slower than the 2% yearly goal ever since the financial crisis. Now the Fed has a new goal for inflation, which is an average of 2%. The new regime allows for inflation to go above and below the target so as long as the trend is 2%. The question is whether this new policy goal will help them achieve their long-term inflation goal. They're willing to let inflation run hot and overshoot their inflation target to get unemployment back to pre-COVID levels, just as the Fed officials have been trained to ignore one-off downturns in the price of oil or unlimited cellular data plans. They will also be cautious about interpreting movements in the airfare or hotel room rates before concluding that inflation is on track to moderately exceed 2% for some time. Since they believe the cost of waiting is low, they will look to wait as long as possible before raising rates. Since the core PC is presently below 2% and has been for years, they're saying it can run above 2% for a significant time before they change policy. The new perspective explains why almost everyone at the Fed believes that short-term interest rates will stay around zero by the end of 2023 under appropriate monetary policy, even though they also expect that the GDP will have fully recovered from the pandemic and expect that the unemployment rate will be below 4%. The Fed is indicating it won't raise interest rates until it sees lower unemployment. It's taking the wait-and-see approach to raising interest rates rather than moving preemptively against inflation. The precondition for rate hikes are low unemployment near or below 4% higher inflation. Most importantly, the Fed is signaling that it is willing to allow inflation to overshoot its target for a period of time to allow the unemployment rate to fall further. Finally, the fact that inflation expectations are rising can also lead to actual inflation moving higher. The 10-year inflation break-even rate has snapped back above pre-COVID readings. Studies have shown that when break-evens of inflation deviate this far from actual inflation, the gap does not tend to be persistent, and it's the break-evens that tend to fall. For the moment, the prevailing narrative appears to be inflation is expected to come, but not matter, and be contained. Let's move on for the factors for lower inflation. The first factor that can cause lower inflation is a weak economy. The output gap is a powerful deflationary force. There is way too much excess capacity to produce goods. Think of this as excess capacity available in the global economy to produce things. Globalization is a big reason. COVID added to the excess. Excess capacity will suppress inflationary pressures until the gap closes. Inflation tends to occur when actual GDP exceeds potential GDP because the economy is running hot. An output gap is when it goes the other way, with the economy operating well below its potential. That's what we see in the recession and what we are currently seeing. Many, including former Treasury Secretary Larry Summers, believe that the additional $1.9 trillion stimulus being proposed by the Biden administration will far exceed the output gap shown in the latest Congressional Budget Office economic projections and will lead to higher inflation. However, David Rosenberg, President and Chief Economist and Strategist of Rosenberg Research, believes that the idea that stimulus will exceed the output gap is wrong. His numbers suggest most of the $1.9 trillion will go into debt paydown, savings, or non-discretionary spending like rent. That would leave little for the kind of new spending, travel, entertainment, service, or otherwise, that would stretch capacity and spark inflation. He is not alone. Lacey Hunt, economist and executive vice president of Hoisington Investment Management Company, states that these sort of debt finance stimulus programs provide only a short transitory GDP boost. He gives many examples, including the 2018 tax cuts, which pushed GDP above potential for a little while, but by 2019, the effect had largely faded. Lacey Hunt believes that these programs actually have a negative multiplier once the effects play out over a few years. The new debt issued to pay for them weighs on growth, the velocity of money falls further, and the economy is worse than ever. GDP is currently running below potential, suggesting inflation is not a near-term consistent threat. Just as tight labor markets is a factor for higher inflation, weak labor markets are a factor for lower inflation. There are close to 10 million fewer jobs now than at the beginning of 2020. And even though the unemployment rate has dropped from 14.8% in April of 2020 to 6.3% in January 2021, some of this is because of the drop in the labor force participation rate from 63.4% in January of 2020 to 61.4% in January of 2021. The Fed is actually talking about how even the drop from 14% to below 7% is not as good as it looks because of the 2% decline in the labor force participation rate. Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell said the unemployment rate for January should be considered closer to 10% rather than the official number of 6.3% due to misclassification errors and workers permanently leaving the labor force. Permanent unemployment as a percentage of total unemployment has been increasing. As of January 2021, 39.5% of the total unemployed have been unemployed 27 weeks or longer, nearing the record 46% set following the Great Recession. Long-term unemployment makes finding a new job more difficult, scars workers' long-term earnings potential, and raises the odds of losing a job if they find one down the road. Increasing permanent or long-term unemployment leads to lower inflation, not higher inflation. As permanent long-term unemployment grew during the Great Financial Crisis, core PCE dropped. There was a temporary uptick in core PCE coming out of the recession in 2010, but it was not sustainable with a still high level of permanent unemployment. Older demographics is a powerful factor for lower inflation. When you are older, you generally spend less, produce less, working few hours, less productivity. Aging demographics are a challenge to the developed world. As populations age, demand for goods and services tend to slow, resulting in lower GDP growth and lower inflation. Demographic profiles are turning increasingly older around the world. People are living longer, they are having fewer children. Economies with aging demographic trends are likely to grow more slowly and have less inflation. The increasing use of technology, including robots and automation, is another factor in lower inflation. The best way to cut costs and boost productivity is with technological innovation. Technology is inherently disruptive and deflationary since there is a tremendous incentive to use it to lower costs across a wide range of businesses. Technology-enabled disruptions means that workers are increasingly being replaced by technology. It also means that existing business models are being supplanted by new models, often technology-enabled, that brings more efficiency to the sale or distributions of goods and services. As part of this phenomenon, consumers are increasingly able to use technology to shop for goods and services at lower prices with greater convenience, which has an impact of reducing the pricing power of businesses. This reducing pricing power in turn causes businesses to further intensify their focus on creating greater operational efficiencies. These trends appear to be accelerating, which are disinflationary. Another factor for lower inflation is the rise of unproductive zombie companies. Zombie companies are firms that are unable to cover debt servicing costs from current profits over an extended period. In other words, these are publicly traded companies that don't make enough money to pay their debt. They continue to exist by borrowing to covering their borrowing. Lucky for them, the cost of doing so has never been lower. Easy money has been propping up lots of unprofitable businesses that have lots of debt and are adding excess capacity. These zombie companies should be shut down or at least restructured. Instead, they are contributing to deflationary forces. Corporate bond issuance in 2020 reached $2.3 trillion, exceeding the previous yearly record by more than 35%. It was not just investment-grade corporate debt, but high-yield corporate debt that also reached records. This has helped to keep zombie companies from shutting their doors, which would be productive for the economy as capital flows to companies that are productive. And finally, the biggest reason for lower inflation is the increase in government debt, which holds back growth. Increasing debt is one of the most critical situations we face. Debt suppresses growth. Lacey Hunt of Hoisington Investment Management summarizes the debt problem in this way. Growing public and private debt suppresses economic growth as the additional debt has a smaller and smaller effect. The low growth reduces velocity of money, without which sustained general inflation is impossible, though there can be inflation in some segments. Inflation being the major determinant of treasury yields means those yields will move lower. In Hoisington's Investment Management's quarterly review and outlook for the fourth quarter of 2020, Lacey Hunt describes a famous Frederick Bastiat and Henry Hazlitt story of the broken bakery window. He goes on to state that fixing the broken windows boosts GDP, but you don't see the other costs incurred or opportunities missed. Just as we can't grow the economy by breaking each other's windows, we can't expect pandemics or other disasters to be beneficial. The other point that he describes is that the unproductive use of debt is not inflationary, but disinflationary over time. The Federal Reserve is trying to stimulate an economy that already has too much debt with yet more debt. The only inflation that this ends up causing is inflation of financial assets, including stocks and housing prices. It's hard to get velocity of money to pick up when the additional money they receive is not being spent, but is being used to prop up saving rates and pay down debt. If the government spent all the money it borrowed and the recipients of the money spent it, velocity and GDP growth would be much higher. As a result, prices would likely be higher. The Fed pushed money supply higher by nearly $3 trillion or 70% through 2020. At the same time, GDP is $600 billion less than it was at the beginning of 2020. As a result, velocity has sharply declined. GDP has recovered nicely but remains below its level a year ago. Fed expects to push the money supply higher by at least 15% this year. All else held equal, velocity will likely further decline and offset the money supply growth. This is due to the fact that velocity of money equals GDP divided by the money supply. So if money supply growth is at a higher rate than GDP growth, the velocity of money declines. So what does this mean for inflation? I believe that we could see a short-term burst of inflation based on easier year-over-year comparisons and pent-up demand for services such as travel, which become more available as the economy reopens with vaccinations. When it comes to inflation, core services matter much more than core goods. Core services is 80% of the overall core CPI, meaning its deceleration is a powerful downward force on the headline reading, and the sharp uptick in goods inflation is easily overpowering the data. What we have seen during the pandemic is an uptick in goods inflation and a downtick in service inflation. So if we do get some pent-up demand for services, this could push up inflation. If we were to get a move up in inflation, it would not be the hyperinflation of the 70s, but a move back to the 2-3% range. However, I believe that the factors for lower inflation outweigh the factors for higher inflation over the long term, and therefore we will see inflation below the 2% average target that the Fed has currently. According to data from J.P. Morgan's Guide to the Market, low and rising inflation environments have occurred four times since 1988. The best performing assets were gold, emerging market equities, and REITs. Stocks overall had double-digit returns. The worst performing assets were cash and bonds. Low and falling inflation have occurred 13 times since 1988, with the best performing assets being growth stocks, small cap stocks, and just stocks in general. Worst performing assets were commodities, emerging market equities, and cash. Since nobody knows for sure what will happen with inflation, the portfolio should be well diversified to hedge the risk of higher inflation or lower inflation based on the factors that I've discussed. Knowing the factors that could cause higher or lower inflation should help investors to make sure that they have appropriate diversification in their portfolio for either outcome. If you're not sure as an investor if you have the appropriate level of diversification in your portfolio, find a financial advisor that can help to educate you and help you to develop the appropriate allocation based on your long-term goals and needs of your portfolio, determined by your personal financial plan. This completes this episode of the Educating Investors Podcast. I know that time is an important asset for everybody, so I appreciate you taking a part of your day to listen. If you enjoyed the content of this podcast, feel free to share this with other friends and family that may be interested. Also, feel free to check out my website at www.harmonywealthmanagement.com to learn more about what I do, as well as to find my contact information and links to my LinkedIn page and blog. The Educating Investors podcast is presented for informational purposes only. The information presented on the Educating Investors podcast should not be construed as investment advice. Always consult a licensed investment professional before making investment decisions. The Educating Investors podcast's host, Scott Peterson, and his firm, Harmony Wealth Management, LLC, should not be held liable for losses resulting from investment decisions based on information or viewpoints presented on the Educating Investors podcast show.